Welcome to Futures in Languages, a podcast showcasing stories from UCF's Modern Languages and Literatures Department. I'm your host, Christina Torres. Today we'll be talking with Carolina Salazar, who is an instructor in Spanish in the Modern Languages Department. She graduated with her MA in Spanish in spring of 2018 before continuing on as a faculty member in our department. She's got lots of stories to share with us today, and I know this is a busy time of the semester. Thank you so much for taking some time to come and talk with us.
Thank you, Christina. Thank you for having me.
It's so nice to get a chance to catch up with you one-on-one. I know that we took classes together once upon a time, and we were just before this recording talking about that, how it's just, it feels both like a lot of time has passed and not a lot of time has passed. Time is just, it's funny, but it's always nice to get a chance to have a little catch-up. For our listeners, could we maybe start off with a general question? Maybe if you could tell us about yourself and where you're from?
Absolutely. I was born and raised in Colombia before moving to the United States 18 years ago. I graduated with a BA in communications with a concentration in journalism in Colombia. So I used to be a reporter before becoming an instructor of Spanish. My first working experience was actually in a college in Colombia, where I used to do my bachelor's degree. I was a student and I was a tutor at the same time for students from different programs who were struggling with the writing. So I was good at writing. And this one professor said, why don't you do tutoring hours? So that was pretty much my first job. After graduating with a bachelor in communications, I started working as a reporter for the newspaper. It's a national newspaper. It's called El Tiempo in Colombia. And then after I graduated, I stayed a little bit longer at the newspaper. I was a freelancer for a year. After that year, I came to the United States. I was like 23 years old. And I didn't know much English. It was very little, the English that I had at that time. So I came here to learn English as an international student. And I came to UCF. So UCF is, it has been in my life for many, many years. Since I came to the United States, so I was an international student, and then I was, you know, doing my master's, and then I became, you know, a faculty. So it has been a long process, but at the same time, as you say, time goes very fast.
It sounds a lot like UCF has been your home base since you arrived here in the United
States.
It
has been. So my gratitude for UCF is endless. This has become a very important part for my history as an immigrant. As a student, I have been growing academically, professionally, personally. So UCF is very important for me.
For our listeners who are curious, and for me, which part of Colombia are you from?
I'm from Pereira. Okay. Pereira is located near to Medellin, which I think people recognize more. It used to be a small city, not anymore, that small. It's where we grow up. Coffee is part of the coffee area, so it's called Eje Cafetero. And it's a beautiful city. We have beautiful mountains. People are very nice. So I really invite everybody to go to Colombia. Every time I talk to someone who is asking me about where I am from, I always say, you know, go to my city. You will be very surprised by how beauty is, the mountains and the people. We are very welcoming people. So Colombia is a great place to visit, but my city is a really beautiful city to visit.
Yeah, I visited Medellin. Medellin is where my brother-in-law's family is from, but okay. I have not gone to Pereira. So now
Pereira is like 4 hours away if you drive in from Medellin. It's very in the same kind of region. So I always like to mention Medellin because I think it's a more popular city internationally. So people can kind of get the sense where Pereira is located.
And that's the place to go for coffee, is what I understand.
Exactly. That's okay. Absolutely. Right.
Good to know. I will sometimes share that information about the mountain regions of Puerto Rico because it's good coffee also. And I'm very spoiled because my aunt will send me coffee from the island, like local artisanal. And so now my husband will say, I'm very picky about the coffee that I drink around here. And I'm like, well, why not? We have access to this really lovely coffee.
But, and you know that now that you mentioned coffee, I always try different types of coffees. I like to try different types of things, but I always ended up saying, no, the coffee from my region is the best one. I'm very proud of the coffee, and I'm very proud of, you know, my city. And
thank you for sharing that. And now we have more information about Pereira and things that our listeners might want to know for their next visit to Colombia. You mentioned UCF, and we both honestly have, in a way, grown up at UCF, I want to say. I can imagine, like, what it's like coming here at 22 and going into, as you mentioned beforehand, English language classes. Could you share with our listeners a little bit about how you found UCF?
Yeah, so about that time, I had family members here. My aunt was living here with my uncle. So I was kind of, you know, coming to their house for the first 6 months when I decided to study English. I didn't have enough skills to be able to communicate or to have a fluent conversation. So I came to Orlando because I had family here. So that was pretty much. And also my uncle and my aunt, they came to UCF as well. So it was like UCF was in the family already when I came here. So I came as an international student. I was doing English classes, but that what is called today the UCF Global, it used to be a different name.
It was CMMS, the Center for Multilingual, Multicultural Studies.
Exactly. That was my place when I came. And I was very excited to be there because I was in contact with people from many countries. So it was a really good start for me when I came to Orlando. So I was there for, I think it was a year. I was taking those classes. And at the same time, I was working at the bookstore, UCF bookstore, as a student. So it was a part-time job where I was able to practice more the English that I was learning. So it was a difficult process, but at the same time, it was very exciting. Mm-hmm. It was like something like I was learning grammar and vocabulary in the mornings, and then I went to the bookstores in the afternoons for a couple of hours, and I was, you know, able to practice a little bit of that vocabulary, of that grammar. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a good combination for me to get started with English language, because it was very hard. I was an adult already when I was learning English. So I was learning a second language as an adult, which is different if I were learning when I was little. When I was little, my school didn't have very good classes. We just had probably 1 hour a week of English lessons, but we were not able to practice. I was not immersed in an English language environment. So when I came here, it was an opportunity for me to start learning new things. It was difficult. I'm not going to say that I was happy all the time. Sometimes I was very getting frustrated for not being able to understand and to keep up on the conversation. But I think it was a good experience. So after that, I was, you know, learning more and more and more English. I finally were able to transition to a professional job. So I ended up working for the Orlando Sentinel.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yes, they used to have a newspaper in Spanish. There's no longer.
El Sentinel.
No longer. El Sentinel. Sentinel. So I used to be a reporter for them. I was there for 7 years, so which was great because I was writing my stories in Spanish. But at the same time, I was using English when I was doing interviews and interacting with people. Mm-hmm. So my English process, like learning English, has been a process. I'm still learning new words. I'm still learning pronunciation. So it's a process. It's a long time process. Mm-hmm. I always say to my students, don't think that you're going to be fluent in one day, because that is not going to happen. If you are an adult already, it's going to take time. Mm-hmm. Relax a little bit. Just take your time to learn a new language. So that's was pretty much what I was practicing more English, at the same time I was working at the newspaper. El Sentinel was a very good experience for me. I really enjoyed learning more about the community. I was able to work with the Hispanic community. During that 7 years, I always had in the back of my head that I wanted to do a master's. Mm. And I was like, I need to go back to school and I need to do my master's. And I always wanted to do something at a college level. I wanted to teach. Mm-hmm. Even if I didn't have the experience before teaching, I was that tutor when I was in the school. And I felt that I needed to go back to do something in the college level, university level. Mm-hmm. And that's when I ended up doing my master's in Spanish. Mm-hmm. While I was there, I heard about the GTA position where you can, you know, study and work at the same time. And I was like, oh, this is perfect for me. You know, I started doing the GTA. And then after the GTA program, I was appointed as a visiting instructor. And then an instructor position comes up and I apply for that position. And now I am an instructor of Spanish. Mm-hmm. So it has been a long process.
Quite a journey. And it sounds like you've been very intentional about it the whole way through, because you had your plan. You came in, you studied your English, but you also thought, if I'm going to do this, I need to have an opportunity to practice intentionally as in my work outside of that. And it sounds like you've been able to really use both of your languages throughout the whole time that you've been here in the UCF Orlando community.
Exactly. And this community has been so good to me. I mean, it has been a really amazing community. I have always felt welcome, even if I'm not from the United States. I was not born in the United States. I have been always feel very welcome here. Mm-hmm. So that was very important for me. Like Orlando, UCF has been really good to me in many sense. Yes, you're right. I was using both languages. I was using my Spanish. I was using my English. And I have been also using the culture, like my culture from Colombia. And now I'm learning every day. I'm learning more about the United States culture, and I became a citizen. So now I feel this is also my country. So I feel like this is what they mean when they say someone is bilingual. This is what is bicultural, bilingual. Mm-hmm. This is what it means. And it's honestly, you use it every day. Mm-hmm. Like in my job, I use English and I use Spanish. Mm-hmm. And I'm very happy for that. I'm very grateful that I'm able to use both of them.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned, too, the diversity of your experience at UCF, and that's really one of my favorite things about working with international students, is that in those classes, almost similar to our department, right, we have people from all over coming together to work, to study, to be in the same place. And one of the things that I tell my pre-service teachers, because I work in TEFL, TESOL world, so we're training the students before they go off into the world, and I tell them, to appreciate the multilingual, multicultural aspect of the classes here, because it's such a beautiful experience to see everyone together supporting each other, working towards the same or common goals, even if they're coming at it from different motivations or different goals for the future, but their goal of language learning or teaching really unifies. And that's one of my favorite things about teaching and working with languages. I wonder if you want to share with the listeners how you might feel about that aspect of our work.
Yeah, I mean, even if I teach Spanish to students who probably are more American students, I feel like we are in our campus, UCF campus is very international. Mm-hmm. And I can feel what you're saying because I participate every year in the International Education Week. Mm-hmm. I'm part of the committee that puts together the events for that International Week. And we have the language speed dating event. Mm-hmm. And that event every year is a wonderful event because we have our professors from our departments, our instructors, giving a short lesson on the different languages, and the students have the chance to go around the different lessons. So it feels international. Mm-hmm. And I think the students feels like they like that feeling of being diverse, like feeling diverse and understanding. And so I think it's important to mention that UCF is a very diverse community. Mm-hmm. And it feels very well to people like me who come from a different country and who work and study here. Mm-hmm. So yes, I feel it's important. It's not only when you're learning a language, you are learning about a different culture. Mm-hmm. You're not only learning vocabulary and grammar, but you're also learning about the culture. Mm-hmm. So fall in love with the language, with the culture of the language that you're learning is key. Mm-hmm. Yes, that was actually my experience. Like I was really like interested in learning about the United States, like the culture, the people, the history. And during that process, I was learning more and more English. So I think one very important thing when you're learning a language is learn about the culture of the people who speak the target language. Mm-hmm. And that way it's going to be probably a lot easier to learn the language.
In our sociolinguistics class for the the one I teach is for the undergrad applied linguistics minor, is the idea of speech communities. And we talk about speech communities, and speech communities use one or more varieties of code or language or languages. It doesn't have to be monolingual, but it can be multilingual. And they have norms for the use. If we're thinking about the speech communities that we would like to participate in, as part of that investment, to use Bonnie Norton's term, the investment in the process, because as you've mentioned, and we can all agree, the process is not easy. The process takes time. The process takes persistence. It takes investment, just as you've shown in your story, like various stages and various intentions towards working for your goal. But it is highly possible, right? So I like that our listeners are hearing that message from your story as well.
Yes, it's a process. You have to give time to that process, and you need to fall in love with that process because you're going to be in a situation when you get frustrated about not being able to communicate what you want to say, or you're sounding different. So you have to really be in love with what you're doing mm-hmm. to be able to go through this, because mm-hmm. learning as an adult is, it takes time, it's difficult to pronounce, it's difficult to memorize sometimes, mm-hmm. but you can do it. I mean, if I did it, mm-hmm. anyone can do it. I didn't have any specialness. I'm the same as everybody else. So mm-hmm. learning a language has been really improved a lot of things in my life, not only because I'm able to communicate with more people that I used to be able to communicate, but also because you find opportunities, like job opportunities. Mm-hmm. And you also, not only job opportunities, but also you can travel to different countries and use the English language or the Spanish language. So you are able to use it in many aspects of your life. And also, you know, when you're listening to music, when you are watching a movie. So when you're able to watch a movie in the original language, it feels different. It's a different when you are able to understand the original language.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Everyone, you heard it from Carolina Salazar. I didn't have to say it. You heard it from her. There it is. That's one of the main themes of our podcast. And thank you for sharing that with our listeners. You mentioned your experience in the MA in Spanish in the Modern Languages Department and how you were a GTA, a graduate teaching assistant. For our listeners who are maybe less familiar with the program, could you maybe share a little bit about your experiences, maybe any memorable stories or classes from that experience?
Absolutely, yeah. So I was taking, when I started the master's classes, I was working full-time at El Sentinel. Mm-hmm. So I was taking one class at a time. It was enough for me. I was, you know, working at El Sentinel was a lot of time. It was a hard work that I was doing interviews all day, so I have to go to class at night. So it was taking time for me to do both things at the same time. That's why I was taking just one class at a time. It was great. I mean, I was taking those amazing classes with our amazing professors at UCF. I was very happy during that time. But, you know, I ended up seeing that taking one class at a time, it was going to take me a long time to graduate. So that's why I ended up doing the GTA, because it was like, okay, I can concentrate on taking my classes and all. At the same time, I can start having some experience teaching the language. I ended up applying for the GTA. I became a GTA, and it was the perfect thing to do. Even if I submitted my resignation to El Sentinel, it was a tough decision to make because I really like also being a reporter. But it was like, I feel like this is what I need to go now. Mm-hmm. And I did that, and I was very proud of what I was doing, even if I have to say that some of my family were like, what are you doing? You are working at El Sentinel. Why are you doing this? How come you are going back to school? So people might not understand sometimes your decisions. Mm-hmm. They might be like, this doesn't make sense to me because you are in this amazing company and now you are going to a different path. But sometimes people don't understand you and they don't have to. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you feel it in your heart, that's enough for you to keep doing that. So that was the case. I was like, I wanted to become instructor at some point. And this is showing me that I can get there mm-hmm. at some point in my life. And I did it. I have the support from my husband. The rest of the family was like, what are you doing this? Mm-hmm. Just asking about what? And I was like, you know, I know what I'm doing. I feel it in my heart and I'm all enough to make those type of decisions and I keep going. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Hispanic families, they are always trying to, you know, be close to you, say, giving opinions. That's something that we do as a culture. I'm pretty sure you understand that. Like, yes. Everybody wants to have an opinion because they care. It's mm-hmm. not because, you know, they care about you. They want to make sure that you're doing good. And especially because we are immigrants, so we know what it takes to come here to get a job. So once you get a job, they don't want you to go to a different path because they feel like, what are you doing? So that was the case. So and I finally made my decision. It was the best decision that I made. I came to UCF back again to my home and I did the master's. So taking the classes was amazing. So for the students or for the people who know familiar with the GTA. So as you say, it's a graduate teaching assistant. So what you do is you take your classes, but at the same time, you do some teaching or you help the department at some capacity. And that's what I was doing. So that was the process that I did. And I'm very happy that I took that decision in time.
Yeah, and the GTA position is a special experience in graduate school because it really gives you a chance to look behind the curtain of how a class is designed. And I remember the experiences that I had with my mentor teachers many years ago, even before UCF, but also at UCF, because I did my MA in TESOL at UCF and I did my doctorate in education with a focus in TESOL at UCF. But all of the experiences that I had with assistantships were really great mentorship experiences to see how the syllabus is structured, how the calendar is made, how the assignments are graded, what a rubric will look like here, and honestly to start making some of the decisions on my own, with still in a sheltered environment where I felt like I had someone's support to guide me through the process. I wonder how your experience compares to mine.
So yes, absolutely. So UCA has been really good on that process for me. Our department has really good professors and other instructors. So I always had the support from someone else. And I was also part of the SAGA, which is the Student Graduate Association. Mm-hmm. So I was part of SAGA and we were, you know, a group of students who were part of that association. And we were always sharing our experience. So we were kind of living the same process. So that was really good. So you not only have the instructors and professors supporting you, but you also have your colleagues supporting you, mm-hmm. people who's living the same experience. So being part of that association was really good. We did the colloquium every year. I am still supporting that association mm-hmm. as instructor now. Because I always think that you need to keep supporting places where they supported you before. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of paying forward. So I always participate in the cultural events they have, language events they have, the colloquium every year. So being part of a student association is also key. Mm-hmm. Also key. It's like participate in the events, participate in every capacity you can do mm-hmm. for association, because it's going to be worth it. You're making connections, you're making networking, you are learning, and you're getting the support whenever you need it, and you're also giving the support back whenever you are able to.
I like what you mentioned about paying it forward, because that is an aspect of teaching, right? I sometimes joke about it as the circle of teaching, right? Because you get support, and then when it's your turn, you pay it forward to the folks that you support in their process, and then they pay it forward. And that's really how we build our communities of practice, right, in the teaching world. So folks who are listening out there, it's okay to ask for mentorship. It's okay to get support. When it's your turn, you pay it forward, and you give the support that you got at some point, and you pay it to the next group that comes through. I resonate with what you're saying, Carolina. Now, you have been teaching in our department for a number of years now. For our listeners who are maybe less familiar with the Spanish language program, what classes and maybe any research experience would you like our listeners to know about?
Yeah, so I have been teaching lower level courses. So I teach elementary Spanish and also intermediate Spanish. Mm-hmm. Those courses are, you know, courses where the student is starting with the language or they had some experience before, but very little experience. Like, let's say they took Spanish in middle school, high school. They're taking now intermediate level. So I really love those classes because I got the chance to teach basics, to teach vocabulary that is related to everyday situations. Also, I'm very excited that I have been able to teach during a study abroad program in Barcelona. That was something that I would say I was not looking forward to that. And then I ended up in that program and it has been the best experience ever. Like, I never had a plan to do a study abroad. It was like I had the opportunity and it has been a great opportunity to take students from UCF to Barcelona, teach a class there has been an amazing thing to do, not only because the students are learning a language immersed in the environment where they can speak Spanish, but also many of our students have never gone abroad. This could be the first international travel they do. So it's very good to be with them in that process of discovering a new country, a new culture. So I feel very grateful for that opportunity because I know this is impacting them in the long time. Like, they're going to be remembering those days when they were in college and they did this study abroad program. It's very inspiring to be able to do this, and I'm very grateful to be able to contribute with my culture, with my language in this type of programs.
Thank you for sharing the importance of that study abroad experience in your career trajectory with your students. I can just imagine how special it is to be with students during that very eye-opening moment in their lives. And for folks who are listening, study abroad is just such a wonderful opportunity to really broaden your horizons and to explore new aspects of yourself that maybe you hadn't thought about before. I'm curious, what level of Spanish do students need to be before they can qualify to be in this type of study abroad?
So this study abroad is part of what is called the UCF Barcelona Center. So the class that I teach in that center is as elementary Spanish 2. Mm-hmm. So the students need to take Spanish 1, or somehow they have the previous basic knowledge for this class, and they have a little conversation with me and I say, yes, you can take the class because you at least have some very basic knowledge. So this is at the elementary level. So I'm not taking students who are already fluent in Spanish. They are at the elementary level. So the thing that they have to do is they need to take Spanish 1, or they need to have an interview with me, what I can see if they took Spanish in high school and they are ready for the class.
Mm. And for our listeners who might be curious, Barcelona is in the area that also speaks Catalan. So exactly. What are some of the layers of that experience for students who might be studying Spanish in an area that also speaks Catalan?
Exactly. So we always mention to them before, prior we go to Barcelona, we had some sessions before and we talk a little bit about what they're going to be expecting. And one of those sessions, we mentioned that the region speaks Spanish and also Catalan. And we always say, well, you're going to be learning Spanish, but if someone starts speaking to you in Catalan, that's the language, the regional language they speak. So they're aware that they speak a different language as well. And they're always curious about learning more, the reason why they speak also Catalan. So we have a very good program because the students not only take Spanish classes, but they also do cultural visits. Mm-hmm. So during those cultural visits, they understand, they learn more about the culture. And that is one of the aspects from that culture. Like, we have someone there that's, you know, explaining a little bit about the Catalan backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So they ended up learning more about the reasons and what they expect, and they can be more aware of the culture of the region.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. And these cultural experiences, is it class? Is it a lecture? Is it more for folks who might be curious maybe what to expect in this type of cultural experience?
So for this program, we are the center. So we have, it's not only my class that goes. It's also a class from psychology. We have a psychology class. We have a human diseases class. There's another class that is in kinesiology. So we have several courses that are going at the same time. So students take one class at a time. Like, students who take my class are only taking my Spanish class. But for the cultural tours, we all go together. So we have about more than 100 students going to Barcelona, so which is really good. The program has been growing. I have been able to participate during 2 years of this program. And if someone is interested in learning more about, you know, not only this type of experience, but any type of study abroad from our instructors at the department, they can even contact the instructor directly, or they can go to the UCF study abroad office. They have really amazing group of people who can help you with funding the right program for you. And they have a financial office inside of the study abroad program, so they can find out if you have some funds from financial aid that you can use toward a study abroad program. So the office has all the information you need. So as you mentioned before, when you're a student, don't be afraid to ask questions. Mm-hmm. Like just you know, you are there because you're learning. Mm-hmm. So if you ask your professor, even your professor, you can say, hey professor, I'm interested in learning more Spanish, or probably is learning Spanish abroad, what can I do? Mm-hmm. Even if that professor don't participate in a study abroad program, that professor is going to connect you with a person who does. Mm-hmm. So always don't be afraid. Just do all the questions that you need. Mm-hmm. And someone is going to be there to take you to the right direction. And then you're going to be able to have amazing opportunities if you just, you know, start making questions. Yes. Don't be afraid. Like, there's no wrong or right questions. Just, you know, questions is everything. And you ended up going places that you were never imagining.
I know. I always tell my students, asking is free. And there's a moment in your life when you have the label of student. And the label of student is temporary, right? But while we have that label, we have a lot of support and opportunities available to us that maybe we don't realize until after we're no longer a student. And then we look back and we're like, oh, there's a lot of opportunities out there while we are students. So I encourage all of our listeners who are curious about these things and maybe aren't sure about it, you can always ask those questions. You can always ask about a study abroad. When I applied to my study abroad, I wasn't sure that I could afford it once upon a time in undergrad. And then I got enough scholarship money to be able to go. You know, applying or asking questions is not a 100% commitment to doing something. And no one's going to force you into something that you're not 100% excited about. But asking lets you know whether or not something's possible.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, if you are interested in a program, you can apply, and then you can have those conversations about, you know, money that you need to have with whoever is supporting you. But if you need to have a scholarship, there's so many scholarships out there that you can apply to. Mm-hmm. So I always encourage my students to start, you know, a plan. If you want to really have a study abroad experience in college, just plan for that. Like, make a list of the programs that you are interested in. Have those conversations that you need to have. Then make a list of the scholarships that probably apply to you. There's so many different criteria that probably you can meet. But you are not going to know that if you don't start, you know, saying, okay, I'm going to do this today. I'm going to reach out to this professor. Next week, I'm going to find out more information about scholarship. So the information is out there. Mm-hmm. And the first person that needs to be interested in something is you. Mm-hmm. Everything starts with you. So that's what I would say to my students. Even in classes, when I'm teaching, I always try to bring information to my class, like about things that are happening around campus. Like, this is the study abroad fair. You can go there. You can find information about a program. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be there. Stop by. Say hi. So I always try to, you know, make them go places, mm-hmm. especially now when we have so many, you know, students after COVID, just, you know, being online, mm-hmm. Going back to campus is important. Like, going to those events and having that networking experience is important in college, because you never know, you're going to meet people that in the future you're going to be able to connect again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the world is surprisingly small. Especially if you work in international types of professions like we do with languages and culture. You're talking a bit about your student experiences, and for our listeners who are curious, do you have any memorable student experiences outside, maybe from the Barcelona trip or from our regular classes on campus, that stand out to you that you'd like to share?
Yeah, so I remember when I started teaching Spanish at UCF, I had this student who came to my class, to the elementary class, like Spanish 1 class. And this student was very, quiet. She was the type of shy student who was just very quietly doing the work. And by the end of the semester, he came to my office and he was like, "Hey, professor, I really like learning Spanish. Is anything that I can, any advice or suggestions for me to keep learning?" And I remember saying, "Yeah, take the next class, you can take." And I was presenting him the choices we had, the different courses we had. He was like, "Okay, I'm going to do that." And I say, "Besides that, you can probably do, a study abroad in the future. You can start thinking about this. This is the different type of programs we have. And you can, try to immerse yourself, try to find ways to practice Spanish. Not only, you don't have the money to go to study abroad program, or you don't have the time, or whatever situation is, you are in Central Florida. Mm-hmm. You have a huge Hispanic community here. Mm-hmm. So you really have people that you can practice with." So I was also presenting him with information about restaurants, places like the library offers one, like Spanish Club Conversation. Of course, it's for native speakers, but I was like, you can find people to practice with. Because he was like, "I don't know anyone. I don't have any family members or friends who can practice with me." So I was kind of showing him that all the opportunities he have, not only locally, but also, the international programs. And he was like, "Okay." I didn't hear back from him again until probably 1 year or 2 years later. Mm-hmm. He was taking more Spanish courses, and then he came to me. He was speaking Spanish. Mm-hmm. He was very fluent. I was almost crying that day. I was like, "I can't believe you talking to me in Spanish. This is amazing." Mm-hmm. And we share a very special moment because we were talking in Spanish. Mm-hmm. So he came to me and he said, "Hola, profesora." And then he started talking to me about his experiences with the Spanish language. And I was like, "Oh my God, this is a really, really special moment," because mm-hmm. I remember the day I was talking to you about the different opportunities. So the student ended up taking more Spanish classes. He went to Spain mm-hmm. for the program during the summer. It was not a program at UCL, but he ended up doing a different program. But he went to Spain to practice more. And the student became bilingual. Mm-hmm. So it was, I think that's one of the experiences that I remember the most. Mm-hmm. And I hold very close to my heart because I remember the student saying, asking those questions, like, "Will I be able to learn the language because I'm an adult?" And I was like, "Yeah, I came when I was 22. You are around the same age. Yes, it takes time, but you can do it. You're going to be always learning. It's a long process. You're going to have accent. You're going to probably have grammar errors. You're going to have moments when you don't remember the word that you're trying to say, but you are going to have, you're going to be fluent communicating. You're going to be able to get the word out." And I was, supporting him and seeing him speaking to me in Spanish was really amazing.
That's so encouraging. And really, that's what we live for, right, in the teaching community, is to get those stories and to connect with students afterwards and hear how they're doing and really be able to see the fruit of their effort, right? It's their effort, but we celebrate it with them. Right?
Exactly. We were just there, probably giving them a couple tools, but mm-hmm. it's their effort. Mm-hmm. It's totally their effort. We celebrate it as our own.
Yeah, we're coaches. Yeah.
Exactly. And we were just given a couple tools, just mm-hmm. tools, and they were using those tools, but mm-hmm. all the work is on them. I'm always happy to hear back from the students, from my students, and when they reach out to me after a couple of years for whatever reason, I'm always happy to learn about what they're doing with their lives. I think that's one of those moments that you feel like, "Oh, this is amazing to keep knowing about what is going on with their lives."
Mm-hmm. So you heard it from Carolina. Everyone, reach out to your teachers. Let them know how you're doing. We love to hear those emails. That's always fun for us. We can live vicariously through your experiences, too. So help us out. Give us positive emails that are just, celebrations of what you're doing. And we always appreciate them.
We always appreciate it, yes. Mm-hmm. I recently had a student. The student is taking my class right now. But she reached out to me for saying that she got admitted in her graduate program, and I was like, oh, yes, excited. Mm-hmm. So those type of emails are really good. Like, someone reach out just with a good news. Mm-hmm. We always happy to receive those emails.
Please send us your exciting updates. We love it. Now, Carolina, we have a segment that we like to call Ask Our Alumni. It's also Ask Our Alumni and Faculty. I know that you are both for the department. And we have a question from our correspondent, Miley. Are you ready to answer Miley's question?
Sure.
When evaluating the course levels students are traditionally sorted in, which level do you think students are ready to learn independently for the language you teach?
Very good questions. So, yes, and actually that was something that I was doing when I came to United States. You are able to start learning at a level wherever you are. Whatever your level is, you can say it's a good level to start. I would say that. Mm-hmm. When I came, my level was very low, and I was, you know, working on vocabulary that it was related to my everyday life. For example, I was working, as I mentioned it before, I was working at a bookstore. So I had to learn the vocabulary related to the bookstore. So always go with whatever level you are, you're going to be able to go to the next level on your own. So of course, taking a class is important. Of course, I always going to recommend having an instructor, the professor, taking a class. But if you want to keep learning independently, you can also do that. You can always do that. Nowadays, you have access to so many information out there. Of course, you have to be careful with what sources you're going to be using. But for example, if you are learning Spanish, I always recommend, for example, you can follow an account for the newspaper of the different country. Like in Colombia, if you would like to know a little bit more about the Spanish, but it happens that you are interested about Colombia. So try to see what is the newspaper there. Like, okay, let's say El Tiempo or El Espectador, whatever the newspaper you prefer. And then you start reading, try to read the headlines, try to read the article, try to write down new words that you're not familiar with. So it's always, always there something that you can use to improve whatever you are. Like whatever level you are, let's say you are elementary, you can go to the next level if you are there independently. And of course, getting a tutor, getting a professor, registering in a class is going to help. But you can do a lot of things on your own as well.
Thank you, Carolina. We are approaching the end of our episode here. And my final question to you is there any advice that you'd like to leave at the end of your episode for someone who is interested in studying Spanish? Really any other language?
Well, the first advice is reach out to us. Of course, we have so many people at our department that can help you with information. We have different languages in our department that you can start looking for information about it. One thing you can do, if you want, you can participate in our language dating event. Mm-hmm. Again, this is an important event that is actually going to connect you with different languages in our department. So let's say that you want to learn Spanish, but you're curious about Italian. So in that same event, you're going to get a mini lesson on the different languages. So you can get 10 minutes, 15 minutes of Spanish, then you can switch to Italian, then you can switch to French, then you can switch to Portuguese. And by the end of the event, you're going to get a better idea of which language you think you are more interested in. Let's say that you had always think about Spanish because for some reason you grew up listening to Spanish or you have family members. But what about if you heard about a different language that you have never think an idea of it and then you ended up falling in love with? Mm-hmm. So I think this is an for an event, so attending this event would be a good tool, a good resource to do, reaching out to our department. In our department, as I say, we have instructors for different languages that can connect you with the right person in case you want to know more about studying with us, doing a minor, even a major, you know, whatever the program is that fits your needs. And if you are studying independently, as the question that we had before, you know, just, you know, start with your everyday situations. If you want to be learning about clothing, start with your own clothing. Like, oh, how do you say this in Spanish? ¿Cómo se dice eso? And then start looking for those vocabulary words that you would use in your everyday situations, like eating your food, getting dressed, talking to someone, just, you know, greeting and just saying, hola, ¿cómo estás? Mi nombre es, just, you know, learning the things that you feel like you're going to be using in an everyday setting.
Thank you. And thank you for sharing the language speed dating. For our listeners who've maybe never heard about this, it is an opportunity to just, as you've said, test out different languages and decide what you may want to study. And it's a no-pressure, free event on campus. And then you can get details about this by contacting our department.
So. Exactly. So the event is always happening during the International Educational Week, which is on November, the second week of November. Mm-hmm. Every year we have this event, mm-hmm. and we are always very happy to welcome students to this event and try out different languages and fall in love with the different mm-hmm. languages. And, you know, that's a good start. If you're not familiar or you don't know anyone who speaks, let's say, Portuguese, you don't know anyone who speaks Portuguese, but you would like to know more about how the language sounds, you can go there and you're going to find somebody who's going to be teaching a mini lesson on Portuguese. So I think this is a good starting point if you want to see, okay, I want to learn a language, but I don't know which one. Or even if you already know that you want to learn French, why don't you give a chance to see how Italian is? Like, you know, just to get more general information. So I think that's a good event that we can promote and we can always send our students to.
Well, thank you, Carolina, for sharing that and for sharing your story with our listeners. It's always nice to have a chance to catch up with you one-on-one. And I will see you in our department.
Thank you so much, Christina. I really appreciate that you doing this podcast. I think it's a great resource for our students to find more information about our department, and, you know, not only about our department, but the importance of learning languages. So I really appreciate what you're doing for the student community and for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Futures in Languages. I'd like to give a shout out to DaVideo Guy for our intro and outro music downloaded from freesound.org. I'm Christina Torres, and our featured guest today was Carolina Salazar. Tune in next time to hear more stories from modern languages. For more information about the Spanish language programs and other language programs in the Modern Languages Department, please visit our website at cah.ucf.edu/languages.